ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 53rd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I've got a real treat for everyone this week. I've got an interview with Sam Johnson and Mike Gagneau about their upcoming parody comic, The Almighties. And if you know what big movies are happening, either out now or will be out very shortly, you've got a fair idea what this comic is about. I talk with the creators about the characters, about the story, and about other projects they have coming as well, so you won't want to miss it. Then I review this week's comics, followed by comics creator David Miller joining me to talk about the latest news and previews, and everything wraps up with a trip to your local comic store. We've got a lot going on, so let's get to it. Okay, I'm talking today with Sam Johnson and Mike Gagneau, and their latest project is The Almighties, and we want to talk a little bit about that today. How are you guys doing today?
Good, thank you.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, good to talk with you. Now, of course, The Almighties is a parody comic, which hopefully will save us from all getting sued by certain people, but... Of course, this is a loving, you know, adoration kind of thing. We're talking about something. I don't know if we can mention exactly who we're talking about, but I think it'll be pretty clear.
I think we can. In the marketing, basically, we're timing this to come out the same time as the Avengers movie. Because mm-hmm. it's an Avengers parody book. We've got the logo is set up as an Avengers parody. Setup is similar. It's an eclectic bunch of characters brought together. We're absolutely tying it to the Avengers, and that's the part of the reasoning for that. When I was kicking around ideas in the first place, was it's a hard sell to get people to trek out new indie characters, so I'm hoping that making the connection to the Avengers, because these characters have a life beyond this, I'm hoping will be a good way to introduce people to these characters.
Oh, so you have plans for the Almighties after this issue?
Yeah, we do, absolutely. We've already started working on Almighty's Origins, which would be the follow-up book, and there's actually an origin for four members of the team, which is up at the website, which is almighties.com. There's five members in the team. The reason there's only origins of four of them is because one of them is the Enigma, that is Stephanos. And the whole point of him is there's no reason or justification that he's on the team.
I get a kick out of the way that you introduced them. Well, first off, let's talk about the very first thing you see. It says is the origin is just the beginning, which I thought it was a great line. Made me smile. I thought the thesaurus, it's such a handy thing.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was kind of cute. And then we get to the stories. And do you want to talk a little bit about the characters? You mentioned Stephanos, who's something of an enigma, as well as Whiteout, who's kind of the person behind what's happening, the setting up of the group. Do you want to talk about the other characters in The Almighties?
Yeah, Mike, if you want to introduce yours.
I'll throw some stuff in here. Definitely, as Sam mentioned before, is all these characters have a life outside of the book as well. And so aside from more plans for the Almighties in the future, they all have their own individual histories and stories going on. I know Sam has done a solo Miss F comic that's going to be coming out, I believe, at some point. Mason, my character, who's like a much darker, scarier version of the Punisher, he's actually appeared in comics before. He's been in several short online web strips, and he has a couple other cameos coming up in appearances in anthologies. He's been in his own solo comics that I've published in the past, which are very much more like violence and action oriented. And he's going to be making some more appearances over the next year or two with some solo stories. Nightfang as well, which is kind of like the team's Hulk. He's a giant werewolf, and he too has his own identity, and he's really not a heroic personality. He's very much involved in the team for his own personal gain and his own personal reasons. We've got Maxitron, Stephanos, Miss F, and they're fairly self-explanatory, but I think I should probably let Sam explain, especially Maxitron, a little bit more,
okay,
more eloquent than I can.
Yeah, I describe Maxitron as kind of answer to Iron Man if Tony Stark's ego was dialed up to 11. He absolutely thinks it's amazing. He's basically, as is revealed in his origins, where he comes from is he was too smart for the jocks, too cool for the nerds. So he basically thinks he's better than everyone. But behind that is an insecurity that's quite a personal one that gets alluded to and revealed during the Almighty's One. So he's flawed, as are all of them. Miss F was a downtrodden housewife that at some point snapped with her oppressive husband and ditched him. And basically she had powers. She was bitten by a radioactive dust mite a while back. But her husband was just wanted her to be, you know, little missus just cooking his dinner. So she never really got to use her powers. And then she decided to ditch her husband, put on the tights and capes. So now she's out there fighting crime, but she's a bit unhinged. So my tagline for her is, Miss F's got issues, and she's taking them out on crime.
Well, I got a kick at the very beginning. They do a roll call, and it looks like it's Nightfang who defines everybody in one word. Yeah. You know, basically, or
from,
two words.
From his particular skewed perspective, British punk.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. It's interesting to me because, you know, British comics and American comics often have a very different feel to them. Mm. So you integrate some of that British feel into this book, which is, you don't take very much seriously in this book.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It's been fun for me working with Mike's two characters because with Nightfang, you've got that element. And with Mason, it's like, if you look at his solo stuff, it's pretty straight. You know, it's like, what if the Punisher was in the Avengers? And it's to fish out of water. Whiteout has pulled them together for various missions, and there's a no-killing rule. And Mason's main concern is whether he can bend, in inverted commas, this no-killing rule, because he's a borderline psycho.
Yeah. He's very uncomfortable with the no-killing clause.
Yeah.
It's unnatural for him.
It's interesting. Well, one of the characters that fascinates me is Stefano, who has links to people in the American government. I won't spoil who. But he
We can give that away, I think, because that's going to be in the promos. I mean, I've already done, like, as part of the promos at my blog, Sam Johnson Comics, there's like a mock interview with Stefanos. Yes, he's holding down three jobs. He's running his kebab shop. He's a part of the Almighty's, and he's also doing some work for Barack Obama.
Funny. They're having a meeting, and he goes out and jumps into a limo, and he gets taken off to the White House. And along the way, he's got to take care of his kebab shop. So he's a very busy guy.
Yeah. You know? He's a very busy good guy. Multitasker.
Yeah. Because this kind of alludes to the fact that superheroes are always so busy with so many different things. It's a miracle. They never get to seem to go to eat or go to the bathroom or any of these kinds of things in these comics. They're just way too busy for that. And I guess he's a sign of that.
He's basically our take on what's going on with Wolverine, because Wolverine has the claws. Stefanos has a massive doner kebab on a skewer, and Wolverine is everywhere. That's Stefanos as well. So that's the kind of comedic nod at that. I mean, I've lost count of how many teams Wolverine is in now.
Yes.
Got X-Force, two Avengers teams. I don't know how many X-Men teams, but it's kind of surely there aren't enough hours in the day.
Yeah, that's my feeling too, is that Wolverine is like Batman, Superman used to be. Superman, Batman were everywhere, and now they've pulled those guys back. But Wolverine and Spider-Man, they get to be in every single team and every single, just about every comic that comes out these days, they're in there.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Slott did quite a good thing with that, with Spider-Man in the regular book, because, like, there was a story where I think it was Betty Brant got mugged, and it was basically he would have been able to save her, but he's been everywhere at once.
Yeah.
So that has, like, been addressed that in quite a good way.
Now, one of the guys that's behind all this is Whiteout, and one of the first things we see him sending the Almighty's after is what's called Fucus.
Nice pronunciation.
I'm trying to pronounce that.
No, that's probably, I don't know if the show is PG, but that's the way to pronounce it if it is.
Well, it's spelled Fucas. Let's just say it like that.
It's an acronym.
There's another way to say it.
There is another way to say it.
Well, you know you're in trouble when they're filming antics for the Animal Network unsyndicated sector.
Yeah.
You know, you're in trouble right there. You know, you got anus and that way, and so right away we're in trouble. You know?
Yeah. With those, a key thing about it is it's like the Almighty's is parodying or having comedic nods to all of the big major Marvel events that have happened over the last few years. And with that, it's a nod to Civil War, where you had the New Warriors in Stamford filming their antics for a reality show and inadvertently blowing up Stamford. And now this is a nod to that, a more low-key version, but it references that, and that's what the ANUS filming is about.
Well, I got a kick because after a while you start to notice, and the Almighty's eventually figure it out too, is that they're always fighting the people who seem to be...
Yeah, something we might not want to give away.
Yeah, I'm not letting that one out yet.
Let's just say there's something similar about everybody that they end up fighting. And finally they figure this out after a while, and I got a kick when all of a sudden I started, that's interesting. There's something similar about these people. So it's a very interesting story in that sense, in the way that, and we were talking before we started to record about maybe there's some political stuff in there and maybe not. We'll have to see how people
interpret that. It's for people to take how they will, but there's a twist to it that kind of gives it a bit more meat than possibly a typical parody story would have.
What I said before we started recording was that I don't think we're making a political statement. I think we're just raising awareness or raising the question for people to kind of think about an issue themselves and come to their own conclusions and draw their own opinions from that. It's just more of making people notice than actually trying to, as Sam had said earlier, we're not banging a drum. We're not making a political statement. We're just making an observation that other people may notice as well.
Now you've got another character that shows up who reminds me of Guy Ritchie, the agent who always seems to be the liaison between, like, say, the Avengers and the government and things like that. He dives in sort of in a very Batman-esque way at one point. And, you know, he represents the Big B, which I got a huge kick out of. That's Barack, you know, the Big B.
So he's like a kind of hipster Man in Black.
Yeah, very, very cool. So Mr. Obama gets to have a lot to do, and there's a lot of interesting things that happen in the book. And I'm just kind of fascinated. Clearly, you've got more in mind, and we get to see they fight one final group at the end that's kind of the Injustice League, if you want to put it that way. Mm-hmm. They're opposite numbers as they go along. And it's kind of you do tip on a lot of the stuff. In a sense, this actually reminds me a lot of Justice League as we get towards the end, as they have Earth 3 people who are actually villains, and we get to see that. So you're alluding to that, too, it seems to me, as well as the Marvel people.
Not consciously, but, you know,
but
we all have...
It's definitely a good observation, though.
Yeah, we all have, you know, influences there that we're not necessarily...
I'm a huge fan of that older stuff, too, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed this project so much, is because as much as I love modern comics, they've become much darker and more serious. And I loved the stuff when I was a kid I used to pick up at a flea market. And it didn't always make sense, but it was fun and it was campy. And you always had this counterpoint to every hero. And that was one of the reasons why I enjoyed this project so much, because it brought a lot of fun into a newer comic. And there's a lot of the new ones, as well written as they are missing that fun factor that really grabbed me when I was young.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have really tried to inject that into it. And as well, like, the trend these days is to go 20 pages. And we've really packed this out to make it a kind of event comic. So we've got 28 pages, and it's $3.99. So you're getting your bang for your buck with it. And it feels like, it's substantially, but it's a fun ride.
Mm-hmm. Now, the art is done by, let's see... you guys have done the script. Eleonora Corsairs, I'm sure I'm butchering this stuff. Maybe I should let you guys talk about the art. Who provides the art in this book?
Well, it's kind of broken up into sort of three sections. You've got Eleonora Corsairs is the artist that introduces the team and their first mission. And she's got a very nice line in facial expressions. I mean, Night Fang, his sort of cockiness. She's absolutely
nailed. She did a great
job. Yeah, just absolutely nailed. When I write scripts, because I wrote the first section, and I don't go all that specific. You know, some of, like, the facial expressions that are there, she would have just taken herself from what was being said in the dialogue. So, just hit that very well. And so there's her handling the first section, which is basically mission one, and we meet the team at the Almighty's mansion. Mm. And then there's another couple missions, which is Pablo Zambrano, and that goes a bit more comical and a bit more action, and he's very well suited to that. Mm-hmm. And then the climax, which is illustrated by DC White, is kind of everything's bigger. This is a big, it's still comedic, but it's action, and it's this ass is getting kicked, and yeah, he hits that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's you know, one of the reasons why we had several different artists that could each master a different aspect we wanted to convey. And also, again, it has that feel of some of the older comics where they used to split the story up into chapters. So you'd read a comic, but like the old JSA stories where they'd split it into chapters, and sometimes you'd have different artists on different chapters, and they'd all kind of come together to tell one story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something I'm kind of aware of on the back of my mind that I was kind of channeling that in plotting it, but it wasn't as sort of conscious as the Avengers sort of stamp. But yeah, there's all kinds of influences that comic fans will find out. I mean, it's a comic for comic fans. I mean, we hope that the commercial reach of it will go further than that because of the Avengers movie connection. Like, we've got a variant edition of it as well, which is a parody of the horribly photoshopped Avengers movie poster when everyone was out of proportion, and it was just, I don't know if you saw that, Wayne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know whether that's the main poster, because I haven't seen it on Billboard. I haven't seen any Avengers poster on Billboard. I don't know if that is the poster or not.
Well, it's a tradition, because Rob Liefeld, when he used to draw, they split off and changed the universes around, and he did a picture of Enchantress in particular, and I always like to rag on this. He drew the legs, and I guess he must have realized halfway up that he was too far, and so he had to draw the top part was squashed with these huge, humongous legs underneath. And I always thought that that was, you know, Mr. Liefeld's signature drawing. Whenever I see him draw, I always go, now, how are the proportions in this one? That's how this goes.
Yeah.
Because he does that a lot. But yeah, if things are out of proportion for the Avengers, that's nothing new as far as I'm concerned. That's the same old that we do. Now, this is printed by Actuality Press, right?
Yeah, well, that's basically our own imprint that we've created for this. We started out submitting to a few publishers, but we had to have this out for the Avengers movie. So we had a fairly narrow window of doing that. So it was like, we did that a little bit, and then it's like, well, let's just put it ourselves.
Yeah, there was no one really that would be able to kind of move quickly enough on the idea to get it out in time. And that was kind of the key, is we wanted to have it drop at the same time as the Avengers movie and let people kind of enjoy both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that always drives me nuts about parodies and things that are allusions to movies. They usually come out so far away from the thing that we don't realize what it is they're parodying.
Right.
And I'm often going like, oh, halfway in I'll be, oh, this is really alluding to that. Okay, now I get it. So it's good to have this timed. And, of course, one of my favorite things is they have their own battle cry, which is very similar. And I always like the word that's, instead of saying assemble, use another word that I like.
Which a mass,
me, yeah. Yeah, which I just think is a funny word to use, you know. We're a big mass, you know, we're a mass. So it almost sounds like a mess to me.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting and funny book, and it's a lot of fun. It's something I think to read if you want to get a light touch to things as opposed to the very dark and serious. This will put a smile on your face, and you'll get to enjoy it. I think it's a great book.
Thank you.
Of course, I got to ask you guys this. Are you guys planning to go see the Avengers when it comes out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
As Mike, as you've said, it's written in a way that we are fans of the Avengers and of the genre, of course. Mike, I don't know what comics you're particularly into at the moment.
Just the last couple of weeks, I've really kind of jumped back into a lot of more indie small press stuff. But I've been reading things like iZombie, Transmetropolitan. But I always kind of have the constant standalone ones that I'm always picking up. I do follow Spider-Man, the Avengers, and some of the X-Men titles, the Wolverine stuff. I keep abreast of what's going on there, and I've always been a longtime Hulk fan, so a lot of these characters related to the Avengers and in the Avengers, I'm a big fan of and follow. And then I like a lot of the Vertigo stuff, too, so I read quite a wide variety of things.
Okay. And Sam, I know that you're interested in like Deadpool and other good things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I've kind of got an ongoing mission to try and land a gig working on Deadpool. I fairly recently did like a kind of parody strip where I broke up, because as anyone that's into Deadpool will be aware, at the moment the story going on is that he's trying to take out his healing factor so he can kill himself and be with the female embodiment of death, as he finds this the ultimate challenge, because his healing factor, I believe, is, if it's not on a par with Wolverine, it's even stronger. It's like he has proven to be unkillable. So he's got this serum now, so that like that lets him be killed. And what's going on with it at the moment is now he's dawning on him what that actually means, because he's kind of away with the fairies. He maybe hasn't thought this through properly, because if he is dead, then that means he's dead. But what I did was I took, I think it was around issue 41 of Deadpool, they had like a sort of fantasy sequence of him and death in this domestic scene. And I, without any objections being raised from the relevant parties, because I made sure that I wasn't going to put anyone's nose out of joint, I broke that up into like sort of little three-panel funnies, removing all the dialogue and putting my own on it. So it's a kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of, oh, it's called Deadpool Heart's Death, so it's a kind of loved up Deadpool. Well, but it's loved up. It's the absolute opposite of loved up. So if anyone wants to see what it would be like, should Deadpool and Death get it together, which we don't know whether they will or not in the actual book, all four strips of that are up at my blog. If you Google Sam Johnson comics, it probably is the first thing that comes up.
And they are really funny. I've read them. Sam has quite a sense of comedic humor for writing for comics. And the Deadpool connection is actually one of the reasons how we first started talking and ended up working together on this, because I was part of the writing team on the Deadpool Core Rank and Foul one-shot from Marvel, which was part of the Marvel Handbook series. Mm-hmm. So that's another character that I'm a big fan of, too. And when it comes to the Almighties, Sam deserves a lot of props for putting in the Friday reference, and I'm not going to give away more than that. But he worked in a something about Friday, and it's magic.
This is the Rebecca Black song. Is a very important device used at some point during the show.
Okay, now we get, there's a future for the Almighties, as you guys are talking about. What about what you guys are working on? Let's start with you, Sam. And what projects are you working on that we should be aware of?
Well, Carbaccini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, which I've been on your show talking about before. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem I've had with this is because it's quite an ambitious project. I've got it planned. I've got a whole four-issue miniseries planned out, and finding an artist that would be able to do a whole four-issue miniseries has been difficult. But what's coming together, I mean, that is there. That is going to happen. But what's coming together at the moment is what will either be Carbaccini Zero or standalone Carbaccini One, which comprises three stories and just basically introduces her world and her would-be lover. And she lives in a kind of downtown Detroit, I guess, and her sort of homies, if I can say that without sounding wrong. Yeah, it sets up her world, and there's zombies, and there's a lame-o villain called Demonicus. And you've got the origin in there, which you can still read for free online. Again, there's a link at my website. But it's that, and then it's taking things from there and seeing her in action, and it really sort of sets up her world. Now, I've got an artist, there's three stories, two of which are done, and there's an artist currently working on the third, so fingers crossed it won't be too long before we see that.
Great.
And the other thing I'm working on is Grant Springford, who's a reasonably well-known small press name in the UK. He's got a team called The Abnormals, which, like some of my stuff, has a Grant Morrison Doom Patrol influence. He's putting together an anthology with various UK creators, such as Graham, who does Mike Battle, that's a long-running parody comic in the UK. A bunch of us putting this together, working on Grant's characters individually, so you got solo stories for them. And that, I don't think it's going to be too long before that's out. So, again, I'll be updating on that. There's a little bit about that on my blog. And, yeah, those are my two things that I've got coming.
Okay. And, Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I really put a concentrated effort this year into putting a lot more work in my own creator-owned projects. I have been doing a lot more mainstream stuff the last couple of years, and I'm getting back to that original feel when I kind of first started doing my own creator-owned stuff. So I've got a book It's a zombie story. It's called The Island of Dr. Moreau's, which is a take on The Island of Dr. Moreau, obviously. And in that case, society is rebuilt after the zombie apocalypse. And one scientist has devoted his time into mastering the ability to harness the zombies as slaves using cybernetic control collars. Mm-hmm. And he's created an island paradise for the wealthy where the zombies do all the labor. Mm-hmm. A news team has come to visit and report on this breakthrough to the rest of the world. And of course, human arrogance leads to mistakes being made, and the living members of the island soon find themselves running from the liberated zombies. Mm-hmm. That'll be out in the fall. I'm also working on a book called Skidsville, which is a noir crime graphic novel that actually takes place in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, which is where I live. And it's a black, white, and red book. So it's going to have some pretty stunning visuals we've already worked on. That one should be completed in the next couple months. I'm working on that with Ron Gravel, who is a small press expert veteran. He's been doing small press comics for about at least 30 years. So he's a great guy to work on with that. Of course, Sam and I have The Almighties coming out. Some of my older creator-owned stuff, like Monkeys and Midgets, which is a humor book about a midget wrestling league that's going bankrupt, so the owners force them to fight apes in the ring for publicity. I'm working on a color version of that. I'm going to be releasing a new color version of it because it was originally black and white. Mm-hmm. Same as the original one-shot Mason comic. It's in the process of being colored right now and re-releasing as a colored edition. I've done a lot of work previously with companies like Marvel, the Classics Illustrated reprint series. I do art restoration on that. And Dark Horse as well. I've done some work for them. So you can find all the different work I've done with different small press and mainstream companies and my new creator-owned stuff and my weekly comic strip, The One Pager, which has a different story every week. It's only one page long. And you can find all that at mikegagnon.ca, MikeGagnon.ca.
Very good. Well, you guys keep busy, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So if on The Almighties, is this going to be available digitally or is it only in paper?
Yeah, it will be available digitally. It's out in paper on May the 1st. Digital, I would imagine, will be around that mark. It's been all on getting it up and ready in time to come out for the Avengers movie. We've only just submitted it to the printers. I mean, this obviously we're recording this a bit before it's going to go out.
Right.
So it's out in print on May the 1st. TheAlmighties.com is the site to get it at, and digital may well be there then as well. I mean, we're doing this interview like literally 3 days after we submitted the pages to the printers, so digital is actually something I'm sorting out or starting to sort out today, and Mike, as we were talking about this before we spoke to you, Mike's got something sort of that, so it will be available digitally as well from various digital outlets, all of which you'll be able to link to from the Almighty site.
Yeah.
Okay, and again, the Almighty site is?
TheAlmighties.com.
Okay, well, that's easy to remember.
Yeah.
So, much success with the book. We need more humor, I think, in comics these days. Not that it needs to be a funny book in the old sense of things, but there's a good place for humor as well as drama, I think, in variety in comics. And look forward to reading your stuff and other good things as you guys develop them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
What are you doing for Memorial Day weekend this year?
I've got the best working vacation planned ever.
I'll be sitting on a panel talking about social media promotion.
I am hanging out with my friends from all over the country and even across the globe.
I'm hitting up several of the writing panels. Anything that involves superpowers, but also that gritty sci-fi thriller vibe.
I am going to be hanging out with the largest collection of podcasters in America.
I'm probably going to kill someone.
Sigler! No! Bad author! Bad!
There will be at least one writing morning at the nearby Panera. I hear it's where all of the cool folks go for coffee.
I am spreading myself far too thin and going on both a podcasting track and the literary track.
So, where am I spending this amazing weekend?
At Balticon.
I'm going to 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 Balticon. Shouldn't you be going too? That's Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, held Memorial Day weekend each year. For more information, go to balticon.org.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
And let's take a look at the latest comics that came out. The book of the week for me was Air Boy Deadeye number 1 of 5. It's a story about World War II finishing, and Air Boy, a hero during the Second World War, has actually helped a Japanese air ace. He doesn't realize that the war is over, and so Air Boy basically befriends him, and the two of them actually end up back in Japan in post-war Tokyo, and there's a conspiracy that could turn Japan back into a war state again. And it's a great story by Chuck Dixon and Gianluca Preda, with art by Ben Dunn. It's published by Antarctic Press, and I always liked the character, so I'm glad to see him back. I've always been a fan of Chuck Dixon's excellent writing. He delivers another terrific story here. It's the first of a multi-series storyline, and I think you're going to like it. The only beef I have about the book, of course, is that I'd love to have it in color, but this is black and white, so be prepared for that. Still, seeing how the war affected everybody is a powerful tale. We see Nazis of several stripes, as well as people from Japan, and even Air Boy wondering what to do now that the war's over. So it's a good book. I liked it quite a lot, and I think you will too. This week's New 52 reviews include Batman The Dark Knight, which has a guest team on the issue. Aquaman number 8 has Arthur dealing with Mira's sister, and that's never pretty. Teen Titans has the team trying to escape from Harvest. Next, I enjoyed Superman as the Man of Steel attempts to defeat another alien powerhouse. The Savage Hawkman is the conclusion for the current storyline. Rob Liefeld takes over next month. Justice League Dark crosses over with iVampire this time. Green Lantern New Guardians number 8 has the group reacting to Sinestro becoming a Green Lantern. The Fury of Firestorm continues to get better, and the new creative team gives it a good look and feel. All-Star Western has Jonah Hex regretting that he ever met Dr. Arkham. Voodoo number 8 continues to explore the character's origin, and Black Hawks waves goodbye, even though we'll see them in other DC Comics, I understand. Other books worth picking up include American Vampire number 26 from DC Vertigo, AVX number 1 of 6, and Daredevil number 11 from Marvel. The Dream Reavers trade paperback came out from Ape, and boy is it good. And also Green Hornet number 24 and the ever-wonderful Warlord of Mars number 17 is out from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week. Okay, it's time for news and previews, and with me this week is David Miller, comics creator of great things like Writer's Block and Avatar the Futurians. How you doing, David?
Oh, doing great. How are you, Wayne?
Good, good. Let's talk about a couple of things. The first thing I know you're really excited about, and that's the Avengers movie coming out this week here in the States.
Oh, yes.
Overseas, it opened up this weekend, a week before the rest of the world did, and what happened was it actually did quite well. It made $178.4 million overseas, which is pretty good. That's a lot of money for an overseas thing. The highest it did was in the UK, where it made $24 million, which is pretty good for the UK, actually. And then it went other places, like in Australia, it did $19.7 million. It set records in Brazil, $11.3 million, Taiwan, $7.7 million, the Philippines, $6.5 million, Hong Kong, $4.6 million, and it did $15.9 million in Mexico. So that's pretty good. It's not the highest overseas debut of all time. This can't come in ninth, but that's still pretty good. And considering that it wasn't opening in the U.S. and things like that, so that's a pretty good start for the Avengers.
So this is just like the opening weekend, not like how John Carter did $100 million, I guess, during his whole overseas run.
Yeah, poor old John Carter. That movie did not do well. In fact, the head of Disney got ousted as a result of all that.
It's too bad. It was a good film. I liked it a lot.
So what do you think about The Avengers? I mean, you're looking forward to the movie, I know.
Well, I've never seen a comic book movie get such a free pass from the press. It seems like everyone loves it, and Rotten Tomatoes gave it 100% freshness. I mean, can you actually remember a movie on Rotten Tomatoes that got 100% freshness?
No, I've never heard of that.
historically, we've seen that whenever there's a comic book movie, even the ones that are liked, the reviewers can't help but give it a little jab to make their own credibility. But this one is everyone, and it's kind of indicative from the response from overseas that everyone's been waiting for this, and there's a very good chance it's going to be very, very good. And yes, I am excited. I've done everything I can to avoid any previews or any spoilers. And I almost had one slip on me, and I threw the book down when I realized there was pictures from the movie in there that would give away some plot points. But, God, I'm almost, like, afraid to hope it's going to be not just good for comic book people, but just good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, the actor who played Loki, he lives over in the UK, and he came out in the papers over there and asked for respect for superhero movies, saying that to make a lot of money, but people always poo-poo these films. And yet there's a lot of good things to be said in the films. So I'm just kind of curious as to maybe this will be the movie that'll break all that perception.
Well, you know what's funny? We've had the Avenger comics for so long. No matter how good they are, we've kind of started to take them for granted. But when you're kind of like looking at the Avengers comic book number one, when you look at this movie, and I'm just amazed at the diversity of the characters, how different they are from each other. I mean, Thor is so much different from Iron Man. Iron Man so much different from Cap. Even Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch, they're unique in their own way. Whereas you could say a lot of like the Golden Age, like say DC comics, like a lot of Mystery Men, they all, I'm going to put on a suit and fight crime. Their motivations weren't very different. But this is like the big three, Cap, Thor, and Iron Man. They could just as easily not be able to work together at all. They're so different. And it's like they just barely complement each other in some ways. And I was like, wow, that uniqueness. I realize I've been taking that for granted over the years in the comics. And it's nice seeing it there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to start this Friday, I believe, in the U.S. And I'm sure the lines will be long to get in to see it. So I'm still hoping to get there because I want to write a review of it for the website that I work with. Now I got to ask you the question. Which movie's going to make more money, The Avengers or Dark Knight Rises?
Ooh, that is tough. Because let's face it, it is you get five heroes for the price of one.
Mm-hmm.
That is really hard to say. I'm going to just stick with Avengers. I'm sorry. I think it might be a long time, but I do have a little story. It's kind of funny. I hope this isn't also free advertising, but you know, my family buys Red Baron pizza, and there's a code on it. You know, you put into their website, you might win a prize. And I actually won a ticket to the Avengers.
Oh, cool.
It's a $13 ticket that I got out of a $1.99 pizza box. Kind of funny.
Very cool. Well, you know, the Avengers promotion's all over the place. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I turned on a special on the Reels cable channel, and they had a big hour-long special about it with video footage we hadn't seen before and things like that.
I will definitely be going right to the TV after we get off then. Hey, but real fast, did you see that bit on the web that I think Kevin Feige said that Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch have been allowed to appear in both X-Men and Avengers movies?
Yes.
Do you think that was true, or do you think that's just some kind of rumor that's been floated? Or?
No, he's come out and said it. He's the guy in charge, so what he says goes. There's no guarantee that they will be in both of them, but at this point they can be. So it's interesting. Of course, I hearken right back to the Avengers comic where Cap basically had to rebuild the Avengers. All the Avengers except for him left, and he had to get the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and Hawkeye to be in the Avengers, which kind of strikes me funny because we're in a different place in the movie than we were in the comics, so I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with that. But, you know, hey, they could even be in the Avengers movie as far as that goes.
Yeah, who knows? And that's another reason why I'm avoiding spoilers so hard, you know.
See, I'm going to go for The Dark Knight Rises just because I'm a Batman fan, although this will be a good test to see whether the death factor of Heath Ledger had a lot to do with The Dark Knight. There was always an idea that since Heath Ledger had passed before The Dark Knight came out, that a lot of people went just to see his last thing since they knew he had passed. And I'm just not sure whether that's true or not. We'll find out with this movie, I guess.
Do we know who the villain? Oh, it's Bane, right? And Catwoman.
Yes, there's another villain, but of course it's not well known who that person is, and I won't spoil it for you.
Okay.
There's something else going on, and if you know your comics, you probably can figure it out if you think about it, but I won't press you on that one.
But don't forget, there's also a Spider-Man movie out this summer.
Right. That's coming right around the same time as Dark Knight Rises, so all these things are all going to hit around the same time. In fact, they've already picked the writing team for Amazing Spider-Man 2, and it's got Orci and Kurtzman. Names you might remember from Star Trek and Transformers and other movies, so right. They're trying to make sure Spider-Man 2 does pretty well.
Yeah, it's going to be a good summer for the likes of us.
Yeah, and hopefully the future, too, because if they're already lining up named talent for the sequel, that's a good sign, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right, second news item, let me run this past you, is Chris Roberson, who is a, I think it's Roberson, actually, who has written the Star Trek Legion crossover for one, a book called Memorial that's coming out from Image and other things. He very publicly came out and said that he was not accepting any work from DC Comics any longer. Now, they had canceled his book, iZombie, and it was all over with. And he was in the middle of writing a spinoff from Fables, and he had turned one of the scripts in, and they came back and said to him, well, don't bother with any more of them. We're not going to proceed with this project. So, in a way, I think he met himself coming back. I'm just not sure that Twitter's the place to go while you're in the middle of doing something for a company to announce that you don't want to do any more for them in the future. And you're a comics creator. What's your response to that?
Well, I'm a comics creator, but I've also been in management, and I understand when you've got someone who says that, you have to ask yourself, is this person giving 100%? Is he giving us our money's worth, or is he just taking the money and run? Mm-hmm. And is he going to give us a black eye later or criticize us and, who knows, even divulge confidential information because he's upset? I think it's a chance you take. I mean, I've known people, actually, who have gotten fired because of what they put on their MySpace page. Oh, MySpace, what about that? Anyway, so it's not just comic book people. It's just, it's the, like you said, it's the social networking. You got to get smart. One thing I'll say about someone like Jay Lee, who I used to know back in the day, is, God, he was a canny person to be so young. He never, ever said anything mean about anyone publicly. And privately, even. I mean, I've seen him be critical, like to critique some work, but not critical of the person. And I thought, wow, he is so smart. And that's really what you got to do now.
Yeah, I think that the thing you got to be careful about is anybody and everybody is reading whatever you put out on Twitter or Facebook or any of those things. And so I think that he's going to lose some money as a result of that. That's too bad. Bill Willingham came out and said that he would work with him at any time. And it would be nice for that to happen, but he's really shot himself in the foot, I think. Some people are encouraging him, you know, oh, yeah, you did the right thing. Take on DC. And Mark Waid's always a very public person about his displeasure with DC. So I think that's going to continue. But I think in Mr. Robertson's case, I think he should have held back a little longer until that paycheck came in and he got all that stuff done.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20. But you're right. If you want to work somewhere where you can support yourself at the page rate, there's really only two games in town. And if he's cut himself off of one and there isn't any work available at Marvel, it's a little tough.
Yeah, too true. All right, let's move on to the final story, and this one just entertains me no end. During an interview with Playboy magazine, Grant Morrison came out and said the following about Batman. He said the concept of Batman and not Batman himself. He's very Plutonian in the sense that he's wealthy and also in the sense that he's sexually deviant. Gayness is built into Batman. I'm not using gay in the pejorative sense, but Batman is very, very gay. There's no denying it. Obviously, as a fictional character, he's intended to be heterosexual, but the basis of the whole concept is utterly gay. I think that's why people like it. All these women fancy him, and they all wear fetish clothes and jump around rooftops to get to him. He doesn't care. He's more interested in hanging out with the old guy and the kid. Now, Mr. Morrison, of course, can basically say whatever he likes because he's Grant Morrison. And I doubt that DC's going to yank Batman Inc. out from under him, which is just now starting up. But this is another thing, another case of where I think that, you know, discretion is the better part of valor. I'm not convinced that saying that Batman is gay, or the concept of Batman is gay, is something that's going to help sell Batman Inc.
Yeah, it almost sounds like it's one of those cases where you're thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Like he's an extrovert. He thinks his thoughts out loud. He doesn't edit them first and then speaks. And then, oh, but you're doing an interview. Uh-oh, it's now part of the interview. It's almost like things you consider, and anyone could make that argument. It was made by Frederick Wortham, and clearly it was silly then. There are aspects of it that also exist in the gay milieu, but it does not mean that it is, like you said, it's like, what was that bit of circular logic John Byrne used to say? It says, I love freedom, Switzerland loves freedom, therefore I am Switzerland. So it's kind of like that's what he was like doing. He was just riffing, or maybe he was just trying to be entertaining,
yeah,
or just be controversial because that makes publicity.
Yeah, well, it sells Playboy, I'm sure. But the thing of it is this has become a cliche in my mind. There's a book that's out from Boom Studios right now called Superbia, and there's a Batman-alike in there, and he's, of course, got an affair with his Robin-like partner, and I've gotten to the place now where, after years of that, I've seen these kinds of things go on, and I just kind of feel like, yeah, we did this already. Let's move on to something else.
Yeah, can't we do a Mad Magazine Batman spoof where Robin's actually a vampire? That was good. But you know, since you brought up Playboy, isn't it funny that, well, Playboy's always had respect for cartoonists, but like in the last couple issues you had, you know, you had Robert Kirkman having a little 6-page Walking Dead bit in it. Mm-hmm. And then this issue you have Morrison. I really think that it stepped up on their giving comics a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in the 70s, Hefner was a failed cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wanted to be a cartoonist, so he always liked him. I mean, he had Kurtzman and a little Annie Fanny and other things and in there, so you could tell he always liked it, but it was always still a very small bit of real estate in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But now, since I guess with the movies, it's now part of mainstream. Maybe it's just reflective of that. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hopefully Mr. Morrison will change the subject next time that Playboy wants to talk with him. All right, let me run down a couple of the comics that are out this week as far as the previews section. Action Comics number 9 by the aforementioned Mr. Morrison is out. Animal Man number 9. Now, this is the first week of the month, so we're going to see several new books in the new 52. Is that Dial H number 1, Earth 2 number 1, G.I. Combat number 1 are all out. There's also the Justice League hardcover, the Volume 1 Origin, Justice League International 9, Red Lanterns, Smallville Season 11 number 1. This is an online comic that they're putting together in paper form once a month. So that's kind of an interesting idea. We'll see how that flies, literally, with Smallville, of course, Superman. Stormwatch number 9. Superman number 1, the third printing is coming out. Swamp Thing, Sweet Tooth, which I've come to like by Mr. Lemire. Teen Titans Annual number 1, The Culling, World's Finest number 1. Of course, World's Finest has Huntress and Power Girl in it this time. So that's different. From IDW, there's Star Trek Ongoing number 8. From Image, there's Blue Estate number 11, which is a great crime noir book. The Marksman trade paperback is out, which I really love that series. That was a great little miniseries. Hopefully they'll do more of that. Supreme is back in number 64, which is amazing. The Kid Supreme, the Dog Supreme, the Book Supreme, it's all back.
All right.
And then we get to Marvel, Avengers Academy, which I really like. Number 29 is out, which is an AVX crossover. Toy Story number 3 of 4. Venom number 17, which is actually pretty good. I like that book quite a lot. And then we go to the other comics, and Garfield number 1 is out from Boom Studios, which is written by Mark Evanier. And so I think that'll be good just as well. We'll also see Superbia, which I mentioned before. Issue number 3 is out. Lone Ranger number 5, The Spider number 1 from Dynamite, and I think that's all that's out this week. So I hope things are going real well for you, David, and hopefully we'll get to see some comics from you real soon.
Oh, maybe. I have some projects on the board that unfortunately I cannot talk about right now, but hopefully soon. Hopefully soon.
Okay, well, much success and good luck with the family and everything, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Sounds great.
It's time once again to look inside your local comic store and see what's new. To start things off with, we've got Adventure Time Epic Win Cream t-shirts, as well as Adventure Time Many Faces of Finn white t-shirts. That's from the very popular Cartoon Network show. There's also an uppercut gray t-shirt as well. So Adventure Time's starting to do well, we can tell. There are Batman Beyond symbol hoodies and t-shirts. There are Beavis and Butthead 7-inch plushes for $11.99. There's also Bobo DVD Volume 1. I wonder how anybody ever knows whether you're pronouncing that correctly. There's also the Claustrophobia DVD, Clown Hunt DVD, Darth Vader and Son hardcover, Doctor Who Bow Ties Are Cool blue t-shirt. There's also the Doctor Who Character Building TARDIS mini set offered again. And there's also the Cyber Leader and the Master 8-inch figures for Doctor Who. Then we get G.I. Joe No With Flint Army Green t-shirts. There's the G.I. Joe Marauders and Deadnik's action figure set. A Green Hornet, historical radio movies, comics, and TV softcover. There's also Hunger Games, Movie District 12 clip-ons, and Mockingjay replica pins. There's a Justice League Dark logo t-shirt, so that book must be picking up and doing pretty well. There's a Magneto Rise Above Red t-shirt. There are Marvel Knights Astonishing X-Men Dangerous DVD, as well as a Marvel Minimates series number 4. Then we get a Rachel Rising by Terry Moore t-shirt. There's the Superhero Squad DVD, Volume 3, Season 2. There's also a Superman Dark Symbol t-shirt. From Star Wars, there's Boba Fett 80s silver t-shirts. There are also Twilight Zone Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic softcover. V for Vendetta People and Government Black t-shirts are out. And, of course, we have to end up on Zombies. The Zombies Hunter City of the Dead DVD is out, Volumes 1 and 2. And that's what's in your local store this week. And that's a wrap for the 53rd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week. We'll have plenty of news, reviews, previews, and all kinds of other good things. But until then, keep reading your comics.